case for argument is Crucian versus United States. Mr. Lee.
May it please the Court, William Lee on behalf of Petitioner Eugene Crucian. The only contested question left for this Court today is the scope of the District Court's evidentiary hearing on remand. The government's already conceded in its brief that this case should be remanded for an evidentiary hearing on Mr. Crucian's claims of ineffective assistance of counsel at sentencing. We submit it was also error for the District Court to summarily dismiss Mr. Crucian's allegations of ineffective assistance of counsel in preparation for trial. Ineffective assistance, which essentially led to a coerced guilty plea. Mr. Crucian's 2255 motion sufficiently alleged shortcomings, the likes of which the government even admits could constitute ineffective assistance. But without an evidentiary hearing, and without...
Now, does he want a trial? Is that what he wants?
Well, he'd like an evidentiary hearing provided for under Section 2255.
No, but ultimately, does he want a trial of the underlying criminal?
Ultimately, we think that if the evidentiary hearing shows, as we submit that it will, that his confession was essentially coerced, that yes, it would require a new trial. But at this point in time, all this court needs to do today is to vacate the district court's decision and remand for an evidentiary hearing on both the ineffectiveness of assistance.
Well, the government concedes that the second part, right?
That's correct, Judge. Well, the government, however, does not concede that Mr. Crucian is entitled to present evidence at his evidentiary hearing the ineffective assistance of his counsel in preparation for trial.
I understand that.
Doesn't he have to be a little concerned about getting what he's asking for here? Because there was a deal struck.
There was acceptance
of responsibility, and the government didn't push for a leadership enhancement. Two very significant things that would probably not be offered or not be available to him if he successfully withdraws the guilty plea eventually.
That's correct, Judge, but Mr. Crucian was sentenced to the statutory maximum under his sentence at any rate, and so really there's very little downside we see to him going back and having an evidentiary hearing. Further, as the government conceded on the issue at trial, Mr. Crucian would have only been subject to a maximum of 57 months in prison, as opposed to the 60 months he eventually got, had Mr. Crucian's counsel at sentencing gone forward with their objections, placed their expert report into the record, and not withdrawn it at the sentencing hearing. And, you know, under Supreme Court jurisprudence, even a day longer in prison than he would be required to spend is sufficient to require a remand, and is sufficient under the Strickland test to show prejudice.
Did he plead guilty to every count in the indictment?
Every count that was remaining at that point, yes. The government dismissed count four of the indictment prior to the plea agreement. Okay. Mr. Crucian's Section 2255 petition.
Now, the idea is that he is the sophisticated, almost lawyer that knows that because his lawyers didn't do something, that's why he decided to plead guilty, right? That's the reason?
I wouldn't categorize him as an almost lawyer, Judge, but yes, the idea is that he realized that
he was a risk assessment, is according to his term.
That's correct. And so he laid out for his counsel a number of different things, which he lays out in the petition as well, that counsel should have looked at, should have prepared for in preparation.
So we're to take his determination of what was best for him rather than what his lawyers did.
Not necessarily, but I think that his motion lays out for us a number of different avenues that his counsel did not look to that any reasonable counsel would have. For example, Mr. Crucian attaches to his petition his counsel's submission to the district court that there are records that are crucial to the defendant's case, that we request an extension so that we can subpoena these documents. They've already been subpoenaed, we haven't gotten them yet, and we need an extension so that we can re-subpoena them. The record doesn't show any subpoena for these documents. Mr. Crucian notes in his
very petition, sophisticated client, right?
Sophisticated in his business, yes. He realizes that his counsel, he was realizing that his counsel was not effectively preparing for his case because his business is admittedly a complex one. And so he laid out for his counsel a number of things that his counsel needed to look to in order to fundamentally understand the case the government was bringing against
him. So the idea is we establish a rule that if a client determines that his counsel didn't properly prepare, he was ineffective.
Not at all. But the idea is that Mr. Krushin's 2255 petition demonstrably shows this court that there are a number of things that his counsel should have done and didn't. This point is underscored by the fact the government concedes that his trial counsel at sentencing in the same situation was in fact, or may well in fact, have been ineffective.
Well, yes, but there's also at least we can infer, although the government concedes we can't, it's going to have to go back to that, but there was some quid pro quo.
There was no deal in place. It certainly
looks like it.
Mr. Krushin's counsel certainly told him that there's a possibility that the sentencing judge will lower your sentencing guideline rank for acceptance of responsibility, but they also told him, and the flip side of that is that if you argue with the judge in your Rule 11 colloquy answers, if you don't accept responsibility, that's out the window. And at that point in time, with the Hobson's choice that Mr. Krushin was placed in, either A, be tried by obviously unprepared counsel and face a jury, or B, plead guilty and hope for leniency from the sentencing judge, he understandably, I think, chose the latter. But simply because he was placed between that rock and that hard place doesn't excuse the ineffectiveness.
Why couldn't he ask for a new lawyer at that point?
Well, at that point in time, Judge, he had already dismissed or had dismissed two previously court-appointed counsel and thought he had the counsel that he wanted. He privately hired his counsel in preparation for trial. Looking at it through the eyes of Mr. Krushin, I think it is not wholly inconceivable for this court to believe that at that point in time, the district court wasn't going to produce him another counsel. The district court had already gone all the way through the discovery process.
Well, you can't allow people to play that kind of game.
Ordinarily, I think
you ditch two lawyers, and then you say, "Well, the third is no good either, but I can't ditch him, so I get another trial with the fourth lawyer."
To be accurate, Judge, the first lawyer withdrew for lack of time to prepare for the case, and the second lawyer was dismissed because at the time that the court appointed him, Mr. Krushin did not have the money to hire the private counsel that he wanted, and later on he came into that money, or at least his family did, and he was able to hire that private counsel. But the fact that they're private counsel does not excuse the ineffective nature of their preparation. Not only does Mr. Krushin's petition lay out a number of documents that should have been subpoenaed and looked at, Mr. Krushin's petition shows that his counsel noted to the court that the volume of records that they did have, the accounting records, were essentially meaningless to non-accounting lay people like themselves, and that they would need to hire an expert to review them. And yet no expert was timely retained by that counsel.
What do you mean timely?
Eventually an expert was retained for the sentencing phase, Mr. Miles and Mr. Coombs. But even Mr. Coombs' report at sentencing notes that a full audit of the underlying records was not undertaken because of time restraints and resources constraints, and we submit that had his counsel been effective and gone about it in a timely fashion, that problem would have been alleviated.
Can I go back to Judge Posner's first question? Because I'm really confused on the state of the record and his request to withdraw his guilty plea here.
I'm sorry.
The state of the record on this request to withdraw his guilty plea. He definitely has, according to your response, wants to vacate his guilty plea, be resentenced.
That's correct. It is unclear. There are, in the record, it notes that after his guilty plea and when he had the reason that his private counsel removed themselves from this case, citing an irreconcilable conflict of interest, is that he told his counsel after he pleaded guilty that he had changed his mind. That he, for whatever reason, and we submit that it's the Hobson's choice in which he was placed and the terror of trial day with unprepared counsel, he decided to plead guilty and later on realized that was a poor decision. Now that guilty plea, for whatever reason, which is another reason we need an evidentiary hearing on this, was never withdrawn. If there are no questions, I'd prefer
to... Okay, thank you, Mr. Lee. Mr. Lanter?
May it please the court, counsel, Dean Lanter representing the United States. The government's position that the district court did not err in denying the Section 2255 motion with regard to the trial counsel's ineffective assistance. After consideration, the government has decided to concede that an evidentiary hearing is necessary with regard to the sentencing counsel's performance, not because the government feels that that counsel was deficient, but because of, upon a review of the record, the government didn't feel as though it was sufficiently clear on the record the sorts of quid pro quos that did in fact occur. I mean, I think could be inferred from there that the government agreed that it would not contest acceptance of responsibility at sentencing in exchange for not pursuing the sentencing enhancement for the leadership. And counsel at that time entered into that agreement. The government doesn't believe that that's ineffective, but simply that the record on appeal is not sufficiently developed, that the record down below was not sufficiently developed in front of the trial court for it to make that determination without an evidentiary hearing. However, with regard to the trial counsel, who is a separate group of individuals, Tom Durkin and Patrick Blagan represented the defendant at trial, and Charles Stewart represented him at sentencing. But with regard to the trial counsel's ineffective assistance, government believes the district court did not err. One of the primary reasons is because the defendant did enter a guilty plea. And under oath, at the Rule 11 hearing, when asked if he was fully satisfied with his counsel's representation, the defendant responded, "Yes, I am." At that point in time, he had the opportunity to say, "Actually, no, I'm not. I asked him to subpoena these documents. I asked him to look at these certain witnesses and these individuals, but he didn't do it." The courts presume that in the absence of certain extraordinary circumstances, that a defendant's sworn testimony under oath at his Rule 11 plea hearing is to be taken as true. One of the main reasons for that is because many defendants after the fact tend to change their mind. After they've pled guilty, they tend to think, "Well, I wish I hadn't have done that guilty plea," and then oftentimes will manufacture reasons for why they should be able to withdraw their plea. Government's contention is that the defendant has not raised new specific allegations in his Section 2255 motion that would overcome the presumption of verity that attaches to his sworn statements at the plea hearing. As a somewhat sophisticated individual, Mr. Crucian was an individual who could have said on the morning of his trial, "You know, I want a new attorney." We don't know what the district court would have said at that point. Mr. Crucian could have explained, "I asked my attorney to do this, this, and this. I realize that I've had two attorneys before this attorney, but I'm not happy with this individual." Instead, he indicated under oath that he was satisfied with his counsel's performance and that he wanted to plead guilty. And now for him to say that he didn't really mean what he said under oath before and that his counsel was ineffective because he didn't do these things, the government does not feel that those allegations at this time justify undoing that guilty plea. Unless the court has any questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lanter. Mr. Lee, how much time does he have? 1 minute? Mm-hmm.
The government is correct to say that Mr. Crucian's answers under a Rule 11 colloquy are entitled to a presumption of verity. That's very clear. But they are not binding to infinity, and that's our position here today, is that Mr. Crucian's petition does lay out new specific allegations of ineffective assistance of counsel, which require an evidentiary hearing. Mr. Crucian,
I'm not sure what you mean by binding to infinity. How long are they binding?
I misspoke, Judge. It is not our position that these are irrefutable and unrebuttable in their scope. Mr. Crucian has shown through his petition several witnesses who should have been interviewed, would have testified, were not interviewed, didn't. Mr. Crucian has showed several documents that should have been subpoenaed.
But he knew it then.
Yes, but and the
government. So he lied to the court.
The government's petition.
He lied to the court.
He took the best of a bad situation.
No, he lied to the court. You can call it the best of a bad situation if you want, but we don't want to reward that kind of conduct.
Well, he's in the risk assessment business, and he assessed the risk and decided better to take the guilty plea.
I see that my time's up. Might I answer Judge Henderson's
sure.
question? He is in that business, and at that point in time, on the morning of February 16th, he took what he considered to be the best of bad options.
Yeah, but a lot of defendants do that. The morning of the trial is when the rubber hits the road and you've got to make a decision.
But in that position, simply being in that position cannot excuse constitutionally ineffective counsel that put him in that position, is what we submit.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lee. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, sir.
So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client.